Welcome to the Giants Talk Podcast. Here's Alex Pavlovich and Cole Kuiper. I know those guys.
Hey, good morning, Giants fans. Welcome to another episode of Giants Talk. I'm Cole Kuiper here with Giants insider Alex Pavlovich, who has spent the weekend watching actual baseball games in actual Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm FOMOing so hard. I am jealous. But we're going to talk about those two games. Plus, Alex and Laura Britt sat down with Jock Peterson, and we're going to bring that to the table as well. I want to talk the topic everyone wants to discuss right now, though, and that is the first couple of games with an MLB pitch clock. Am I crazy that I kind of love it, Alex? I feel like I'm going back on all of my stop changing the game nonsense I've been digging my heels in with all offseason. Once I saw it in action, I was smitten.
So Gabe Kapler on Saturday after the game, which was 3 hours and 6 minutes, which is very normal, right? Basically exactly what the MLB average was last year, except this was a 10-8 game with like 25 hits and 6 errors and 15 pitchers. So the type of game that's usually extremely long. Afterwards, he said, I think this is going to be a better brand of baseball. And I 100% agree with him. And I've been on board with the pitch clock in general, just because, you know, some games have gotten really long. Like, I saw your dad after that game, and he was like, what would this have been last spring? 5 hours? Like, yeah, it would have been. I think my main takeaway from two games, one against the Cubs at Sloan Park in Tempe, and or Mesa, who knows where we were. I don't know. All those little Arizona towns run together. But and then one at home on Sunday was just that I think all of these rules are going to be really good, and I think nobody's going to really notice. And if you are complaining about it, if you are one of the people, if you're a reply guy underneath the tweets, every time we tweet about pitch clock or shift or something like that, and you're getting angry, you're just getting angry just to get angry. You just want something to be mad about. And, you know, it's not going to be like extreme. It was like 2 hours, 45 minutes on Sunday, and it was a 7-6 game. It was a good pace. Like, it's not going to be 1 hour and 45 minutes, maybe like when Alex Wood throws a shutout, we'll have that, but it's just going to be a faster pace. You know, players adjusted to it. The bases look weird when you see them next to the other base, but then we actually watch a baseball game, you don't notice at all. Like, you can't even tell. The shift, like, it was nice to see left-handed hitters come up there and not see four guys bunched together. Like, Cody Bellinger went up there and Brandon Crawford was playing up the middle and the Giants had a normal defense and it was somewhat normal. Like, that was the guy who got shifted 92% of the time a couple years ago. So my main takeaway from all of it was just like, it was delightful, and you can quibble with little things here and there, and we will over time, and there will be little controversies here and there, but it makes the game faster and guys have adjusted. And, you know, I would say if even Camilo Duvall is ready to go at 8 seconds, when last year he was like 370th in the majors in pace, then everybody else can get on board with this. So that's my rant. And I know some people still disagree, but it's not 3 hours and 7 minutes was not the norm while you guys were growing up. So it just got this way. So people who are like, this is not the baseball I'm used to. Well, no, 3 hours was not the baseball you're used to. You grew up at 2.5 hours, 240, a better pace, more balls put in play, guys hitting 300, more stolen bases. So, yeah, I just am 100% on board with it after two games.
Better pace part is really what I'm looking forward to, because it's not going to take long before the clock just stops being something you think about and deal with, and the pace of the game has just naturally gotten faster. I will say it was kind of funny listening to the broadcasters get in their swing of things and not be able to tell complete stories and go off on tangents. It kind of reminded me of when you're playing a video game and you just fast forward through dialogue options and the cutscenes to get to the next piece. You're not a huge gamer guy, so that's probably
I'm not, but it's not a great
yeah,
but it's one thing I noticed is like, I see a lot of people going like, the media wanted this. First of all, we didn't have any vote. Like, I am neither part of Major League Baseball or part of the MLB Players Association. Like, we had no say in this. I think media is happy about it because the game's moving faster. But yeah, I noticed that on Saturday. I'm like, you know what? I used to do a lot of other stuff. during games because you'd have a ton of free time in innings, and you just have to pay closer attention. And that's just, it's just the reality for everybody. I know people are, a lot of people, the one thing I understand is people who are like, I go to two games a year. I don't care how long it is. But again, I would say like, you're not out of there at 2 minutes and 10, 2 hours and 10 minutes. Like you're probably still out of there at 2:45, 2:50, something like that. So it's not going to be too extreme. It's just a better pace. And
yeah,
look, guys were, I wrote about this on Saturday. There were two runners on for Sam Long and Trey Mancini at the plate, and they just went. It was a five pitch battle. It was like 80 seconds or something like that. And they just went at each other, and it ended with an RBI single to right. But there was no, nobody was messing with his batting gloves. Nobody took a long walk behind the mound. Nobody stepped out three times. There weren't four pickoff throws. Like they just went at each other, and it was good baseball.
Yeah. No, I think it was the day before the Giants played on Friday, a clip of the new pitch clock from one of the first games hit the internet. And I immediately fell in love. I called my dad and I was like, you've got to watch this. This is it. It's huge. It feels like I'm watching basketball. So the tempo is incredible. And I'm excited to see how that same tempo translates to baseball that actually matters. If it feels the same way rather than just hucking pitches and it doesn't really matter what the outcome is on a team or game level. But it's going to be a really fun year.
By the way, those clocks you're seeing on TV, that is another issue people have. Like, that's not going to be that way during the regular season. So it's, from what I've heard,
the shot clock.
Yeah, it's, you're not going to be seeing it in the corner. I don't know what we're going to do with the broadcast. I know people who watched the Cubs broadcast on Saturday, like, it was pretty dramatic, the countdown. I would imagine.
Yeah, I want to avoid that. I don't want the countdown to be like a, a every at bat, you're counting down to the last second. Just the pace of play is going to naturally change.
But like when you see it on, and I'm sure people have seen it, and anybody who's watched a game in the last 3 days, you see the clock behind the batter. At Oracle Park, my understanding is it's going to be where Gabe Kapler stands. Like it'll be on the other side, on the other dugout as well. It'll be visible at the ballpark. Obviously, it'll be visible on the batter's eye. So when you're at the park, you will be able to see clocks. But if you're watching a game at home, if you're watching NBC Sports Bay Area and listening to Kruk and Kipe, you're not going to see two clocks like right behind Juan Soto. So yeah, I think, you know, we're ironing things out. They're ironing things out right now in spring training, but I'm 100% on board. I was happy with it. And I really am curious, like people who are still upset about it, I am curious what they're like, if they've watched a game with it and what their actual gripe is, other than just feeling like, look, Manfred has screwed up a lot of things the last 6 or 7 years. I don't think they screwed this up. I think they've done a good job with this. And there's so many things we haven't even talked about. And there's so much more strategy that comes into play in certain respects. I just think it's all going to be fun.
It is. And it's kind of funny that we're giving it such a rave review right now, despite the fact that there were five violations in the Giants' first game. And we'll talk about this later on, but not to mention the Braves Red Sox game that ended in a tie with the bases loaded and a full count due to this.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's little things that pop up during this. One of them is, and I'm sure this will be figured out by the regular season, but nobody's tracking the violations necessarily, so we're just kind of doing it in the press box. So I think those need to be in the box score or something, or Baseball Savant needs
to
have
them. That's a good point. Like, those should count as an error.
Yeah, we need to know what's going on. But we counted five on Saturday. Two of them were the Giants just not getting the ball down to second base in time between innings. Because look, there's a clock on everything now. You have to, like, they're more committed to that now. They're like, you can't be walking in from the center field wall. Which even Camilo, like, he makes his long, slow jog. He was fine. He got his warm-up pitches in. But those were two of them. And then Casey Schmidt had one on Saturday. JD Davis had one on Sunday of just not getting in the box in time. And then there were a couple other ones on pitchers, but it was very minor. And it was, you know, again, for the first game, I think that's pretty good. And I think by the time we get to the regular season, you know, we'll see one or two a game. For the most part, is my guess, but it seems like guys have mostly figured it out.
Right. I want to mention Sam Long on the mound. That was pretty cool. He was dealing through his pitches, and then when it came down to it, it got a little tomfoolery out there and waited to the last second against Hosmer.
Yeah, it's, you know, when I go to the strategy, like, I think there's a perception that everything pitch clock, pitch calm, pitchers now using pitch calm, like all that is just kind of automating the game. And in a weird way, I think we're bringing a lot of strategy into it. Mm-hmm. And Sam did something really cool, which is Sam works fast anyway. He's top 10 in the majors in pace as it is. And he was delivering his pitches at 8 seconds, like 8 seconds, boom, 9 seconds,
boom,
every time.
Boom.
And then with the runner on, you get 20 seconds. And he was sometimes at like 12 seconds, like he was 12 seconds, 10 seconds. So working fast, putting the pressure on Trey Mancini and Eric Hosmer with two runners on. And then all of a sudden he let it go down to zero on Hosmer. And Hosmer literally looked up and he asked the ump, he's like, are you going to call a ball? And he's like, well, it's not at zero yet. So he let it get down to, I think it was like two or three when Hosmer called time. And then he called time. He gets his one timeout. He was a little confused. And then Sam Long comes back and at 8 seconds throws a fastball. Hosmer swings through it. And he was like asking the ump afterwards, like, what was that? And he's like, that's all within the rules. Like everything he did is fine. He's allowed to hold for you. He's allowed to hold on you for 20 seconds if he wants, as long as he throws the pitch. And we talked to Sam about that. And he was like, yeah, there's little things you can do like that. And it makes it uncomfortable. I think hitters are going to have a bigger problem than pitchers because they lose some control here. And we know there's so many guys who just love to step out, stare at the sky, adjust their batting glove. The whole world's looking at them. Yeah. And then they're in control. They're in control. I think the pitchers are in control now. And it was interesting. And there's a lot of – Alex Wood told me a couple weeks ago, he was like, guys are going to weaponize this. And so I think there's going to be a lot of strategy like that. Another one, Blake Sable, who is the catcher that day, he brought up the Sam Long thing, and he was like, the problem is you can't do that too often, because if you're a base runner, it's basically like having a shot clock in the NBA, or having, you know, a countdown. If you're like a pass rusher in the NFL and you see the clock getting down to like zero, you know you can go. So he's like, guys in the minors, they would kind of use that as like a countdown clock, like they'd see it at 3-2 and they're like, okay.
Yeah, well, so if you don't pitch at 11 or 12, if you wait until 20, 15, whatever, with runners on, they know to go.
Yeah, and if you see it, and let's say the guy can't throw over anymore, which we have disengagement rules now as well, you know he can't throw over, you know the clock's down to 5 seconds, and you're like, as soon as this gets down to two, I'm going. And he's got to go to the plate. So there's just going to be a lot of cat and mouse, and I think it's just going to be like more interesting during the season. Like, there's going to be little things in the fourth inning that you're like, well, that was interesting. So it was, again, all on board.
We mentioned Camilo Duvall, but I think it's worth talking a little bit more about him because of how much discussion Giants fans, Giants media, and us on this podcast have had about he's kind of the guy we expect to have issues with this season. And he just showed up and decided to prove everyone wrong.
Yeah, he just was like, okay, cool. You guys have been asking these questions. You've been asking Gabe these questions. Gabe has been asking these questions. And I'm never even going to get under 3 seconds. So he actually ironically got a strikeout because the batter with two strikes, the first guy he faced all spring, it's this guy, Alex McGarry with the Reds, with two strikes, he wasn't in the box in time. And he got called out. I will say one downside to all this. I did notice the home plate umpire on Sunday was a little too excited. It was like, there's a little,
he was doing big punch outs for the,
it's not punch outs. It was a very dramatic, like, hand. He was grabbing his own arm. But there's a lot of potential for ump shows here for guys who are. So we are going to have to be careful with that. And you know, we know umpires, right? Like, they like to be in the middle of it. So I think I hope MLB is also careful with that, and we don't have guys who are one way or the other kind of making themselves part of it and being like, yep, two strikes, eighth inning, two outs. Huge spot. And I called the guy out for maybe being in the box, maybe not being in the box.
Because I was kind of approaching this as a cool rule because it's almost judgment free. It's not something the umpires are. It's not like a balk or a check swing where it's just like it changes from umpire to umpire. It was under my impression they have actual timers, and they get, you know, alerted when the time runs out. And
they do, but
you're right. Whether someone's in the box or when to start it, I guess that all is judgment based.
And it's again, I'll go back to football. It's like there's a clock, but what percentage of plays do we see where a guy, you know, you see it on your TV hit zero? And so I think there's going to be an element of like, there's still that, like a little bit of leeway, a little bit of like, yeah, this guy's leg was up or this guy was in the box or, you know, the Braves Red Sox thing. Like there was some question about the catcher, I think, of where he was, there's going to be that too. Like, is the catcher set in time? And there's all sorts of little rules. I just hope that we don't have like ump shows, because the guy on Sunday was very, very happy to call McGarry out with two strikes. And so you are going to have some upset players if an umpire is like taking glee and being like, nope, 8 seconds.
If we're gonna talk about the ump show and about this rule, let's talk a little more about Braves Red Sox. I was kind of surprised by the outcry of a spring training game ending like this in a tie. I thought people were being huge babies about this.
Again, it could only end in a tie because it's a spring training game.
So exactly.
That's what we're talking about here. Like, it ends in a tie because they don't want to have a pitcher go out there for one more inning who is not scheduled to throw one more inning this spring, which didn't used to be the case. Like, even 5 years ago, you'd have, you know, Boach look down to the other dugout and be like, you got a guy? Okay, I got a guy. We'll play the 10th. So I for most of this stuff and violations and what happened in Braves Red Sox, which is a game ending in a tie because the guy, two strikes, two outs, guy's not in the box in time. And I think the point of this is to get that out of the way on February 25th or whatever it was, like not on March, not on April 25th or May 25th. Like the point is that it happens here in February and everybody learns their lesson. And, you know, the Giants on day one learned a lesson. They're like, we have to be a little bit quicker about getting the ball down to second base at the end of innings. On day two, it wasn't a problem for them. They didn't have any violations in that respect. So, yeah, we're here to learn here in February and March. And you know, we'll have the Bay Bridge games back in Oakland where people will have to adjust to there's one at Oracle too, I should say. People will have to adjust to like where the clocks are and it'll be a little bit different. And, you know, once there's more television broadcasts and the between innings it's a little bit longer, like that'll be an adjustment. But the point is to do all of this now, so once you get to the season you're just like, let's go. So I didn't understand, like,
it feels normal. Like,
did people bet on this game? Like, was somebody what are people upset about?
I mean, that's the thing, right? So many people saying, you know, this isn't baseball, a game can't end like that, you can't take the bat at. We've seen games end like that. Just because it's a new rule, games still end on box. Games still end on check swings. Giants fans know games can end in horrible umpire ways more than anyone.
Great point about Wilmer. I think we will have at some point this year, like there will be at some point this year, a game will end in a disappointing way and everybody will go crazy. And it'll be on PTI and it'll be trending
on Twitter for 2 weeks.
It will. Yeah. But it happens in general anyway. So yeah, it's just we'll just have a different weird way for a game to end. Yeah. And the next day people will come back and they'll be fine.
That's to the grind. It's a marathon, people. Yeah. Well, all right. We're talking a lot about the pitch clock. Let's talk about the games in particular, because I thought this was an interesting two games to start with, especially, I don't know, I kind of have forgotten how to watch spring training games. So I'm looking at game one where the Giants lose and game two where the Giants win. And, you know, game one was the better game.
The thing about spring training games is that they almost do not matter at all.
Exactly.
So you talked about.
I had a family member at Sunday's game and she was like, wow, what an exciting walk-off and the Giants win. You guys must be ecstatic. And it was like, no, not really. There were a lot of strikeouts and I would have rather been at the loss. I'd rather be at a 4-home-run loss than a 10 strikeout win.
I can tell you, having, you know, covered them for over a decade, like even the managers do not care unless you have lost like 8 in a row. And then they start to go like, it'd be nice for these guys to prove, you know, not some of them, just it'd be nice for these guys to not lose every spring game. It'd be nice just for that. But like nobody ever knows what their spring record is. Nobody ever knows who has the best record in spring training. It's usually like the Reds or something, like somebody, you're like, nobody cares. So what you're there for is individual guys, and you're there for just a general, I will say, like, there's a general defensive sloppiness that ordinarily you would go like, who cares? This is spring training. But I wouldn't say just only in the two games, and especially that first game where there were six errors. I would say also just watching drills on Sunday, like there wasn't the sharpest. And I think that is probably where the staff goes, like, ordinarily you wouldn't care. Coming off of the season they just had where sloppiness was basically the theme of the year, you probably want it to be a little bit sharper. And Gabe did say that on Saturday. He's like, this is not ideal. Again, mostly guys who are not going to be on the roster this year, but a couple guys who will. Tyro Estrada, Elliot Ramos had a misplay. As good as Casey Schmidt was, and we'll get to him, like he made a mistake as well. So there was some sloppiness there, and I think it was a little like, if this was 4 years ago, you don't care. Coming off of the 2022 season, you're like, this should be the one focus of camp, is like lock it up a little bit. Yeah. But that's like the negative. The positive, Blake Sable hit a long home run. You know, good start for him. Casey Schmidt looked outstanding on Saturday. Made a really nice play down the line where, like, the runner kind of screwed up and thought it was down the line and thought Casey had no shot at it, and then showed off the arm and got out of the inning, and then hit a very, very long home run, like basically all the way up the berm in left field. So you have some guys.
Broadcast said this is going to the scoreboard.
Yeah, he let Dwayne kind of get into it on day one. So some guys who did show out a little bit. And I think the most important one is for Sable, just because he's a Rule 5 pick and he's trying to force his way into that catching competition. And we will talk about Luis Gonzalez in a bit, but you know, Sable can play outfield as well. It's not a priority right now, but if he shows he can hit and they really think he can hit at a big league level, like, he makes it an interesting conversation in a month.
I want to circle back to Casey Schmidt because he had, he checked pretty much every box you could check for a 2023 game. He did the pitch clock violation. He got a loud home run. He got a splashy catch, and he got an error. What else could you look for a Giants 2023 game?
Yeah, I think there were some nerves there. It was his first. I asked him in the morning, I'm like, first spring training start? And he's like, first spring training game. Like, he had never.
Yeah, exactly. Never,
so there were some nerves there, but the home run was very impressive. And I think just, you know, defensively, he started a first base, or he started a double play in the first inning, and you just go like, that looked really easy. And I talked to Crawford afterwards, who hasn't gotten to know him that much, but has watched him a little bit. And he's like, you know, it reminds you a little bit of like a young Longo. Like he just makes things look easy at third base. And so it, like, the glove is as advertised, and if he can hit, he's going to be the third baseman here, because defensively he has the potential to be elite.
Yeah. Well, okay. Before we move on from game one, I also want to shout out Lamont Wade Jr.'s bat. I don't know about you, because I didn't have access to video or in person. I was listening on KNBR, but from the replays, it looked like Lamont Wade Jr. tweaked his swing a little, and it looked gorgeous.
He just looks like the guy from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, one thing he told us earlier in camp was that it wasn't just the injury last year that happened in spring. Like, he came into spring feeling a little uncomfortable with his legs, like did not feel 100%. And there's all these things you find out later after something like the lockout. You're so focused on roster moves afterwards. And obviously, like, the big names like Brandon Crawford, you don't think about a young guy like Lamont Wade Jr., who all of that offseason said he felt like his, you know, his legs were not in a great place and felt like he didn't have a good base underneath him. And he could not talk to the Giants. He wasn't allowed to because of the lockout. So he came into camp last year. He said he felt like he was behind and then gets hurt in camp and just is not healthy the entire year. And it's just a disaster for him. But he's a guy that, if you ask Gabe Kapler who looks best in spring training right now, he will say Lamont Wade Jr. So
that's what I want to hear.
It's extremely important. One, because he's their starter at first base. He did make a really nice scoop, by the way, on that Schmidt throw. And two, because he's potentially their leadoff hitter. So you and I have talked a lot about where do you find upside on this roster. Like, one pretty good place is if you get the 2021 version of that guy instead of the 2022 version. And so a good start for him.
There we go. All right, let's talk game two. Giants took on the Reds and won it in exciting but not mattering fashion with a walk-off from Will Wilson. But I think one of the main stories from that day was the pitching, and specifically Sean Manaea throwing harder than he has thrown in ages. I got to imagine there's some disgruntled Padres fans watching those numbers.
I mean, they're in my mentions. So it's I got retweeted into Padres Twitter and they weren't happy. But yeah, he looked good. He looked good. He's throwing hard. And we've seen him at his best. Like, we saw him last year a couple times, including at the end of the year. So it's two innings. You'll see what it looks like after he's made three starts and has to bounce back. He's, you know, pretty fresh right now, but a good start for him as well.
And then Sean Jelly looked good up there as well, struck out two in two innings. Sean Jelly's one of my dark horses to be in the bullpen in April, May. So I'm putting some emotional eggs into that basket. I want to see Sean Jelly thrive this year.
Put on 15 pounds. You won't there notice it.
No,
you won't. But put on 15 pounds of mostly lean muscle. And his whole thing is he's trying to keep his velocity. Like, we saw it last year, he'd come in, he's throwing 95, and you're like, oh, this version of Sean Jelly. And then it's 92, and it's not as good. Mm-hmm. So he needs to keep that 94, 95. He had 96 by the end of the year. So that's what his focus is.
All right. And then Michael Conforto was another big story. The first hit, I mean, he struck out a couple times on Sunday, but got his first hit in years, which I know it's preseason, but must have felt fantastic.
You make it sound like 2017. It was 17 months.
Literally more than a year.
First game in 17 months. So he was excited. And yeah, you watch him and Yaz and Haniger run around together and you're like, well, that's a new outfield.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be cool to see these guys kind of come together and gel.
I like it. Him and Haniger especially have become pretty close, I think. So now you just knock on wood and say, hope you're healthy in a month.
Aside from the two games, Media Day was also this past weekend. How was that? I would love to be on the ground for Media Day and see all the shenanigans that go on. I'm seeing Sean Jelly having to like scrunch down to fit in the camera shot. I'm seeing Alex dressed nicer than I've ever seen him.
Not ever. It was just put a blazer on. It wasn't wasn't wearing a tux or anything. Media, it's, you know, players hate it, but they also love it because you're getting your photo taken. They all grumble about it, and then they do anything. They're like, what pose do you want? Yes, this is like yearbook day. Media Day, my highlight of Media Day was John Brebbia showing up to our social stand with a beard. It's just a normal spring, like kind of the length you and I have, just a guy hasn't shaved for a couple weeks. And I was like, oh, is this going to be different this year? We know John's story. He shaves at the start of every year, grows it out. And he realized that he had not taken his scoreboard photo yet. So 10 minutes later, John Brebbia comes back clean shaven for his scoreboard photo. So you will see him on the scoreboard this year, clean shaven. He literally went back into the clubhouse to shave in the middle of photo day, which is just Sean Brebbia.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, he's going to be unrecognizable come, you know, in August, September, and you look up at that scoreboard photo and it's like, hey, can we retake this? Yeah. I want to shout out, you posted this on Instagram and I got a kick out of it. Von Braun doing the full old school stirrup socks with pants over the knees like Hunter Pence. Love that energy from Von Braun out there.
Yeah, Von Braun, he hasn't played much because he did have very minor knee surgery last year. So he's a little bit behind. And, you know, obviously we know what he did last year at the minor league level. Like, I'm curious to see to have more people get an eye on him, like get a look at him and more like Giants fans get a look at him, because there are some serious Hunter Pence vibes. Like, you watch him run around, you watch him take BP, you watch the way he wears his socks. It is as close as you can get to Hunter Pence as a prospect. So he's exciting.
And I think I heard Hunter's going to be in camp doing various coaching type things. Put the two of them in a room together and let Hunter rub off on
him. I'm sure they will.
Fantastic. Other spring training-esque adjacent things. We talked about Luis Gonzalez. What do you think this means for the Giants? Is this something you expected, Luis Gonzalez's back strain?
Well, no. I mean, you know, it sucks for him for a number of reasons. I didn't project him to be on the opening day roster, but obviously a pretty important depth piece for him in an outfield with, you know, a lot of guys with long injury histories.
Yeah.
And he had bulked up in the offseason. He was hoping to have a better year this year. And I think the real bummer for it, there's a number of reasons why this sucks for him. The biggest, I think, is that he is very likely to not even really be a real option for that Mexico City trip at the end of April. And he's literally been in the promotional material for that. He's from Hermosillo. He's very excited for that. He wanted to play for Team Mexico in the WBC. So 4 to 6 weeks from the end of February, makes it a little tough. And just, you know, for his career, I mean, a guy who was rookie of the month right off the bat last year and then got hurt. And it's the same with when you and I had the Luciano conversation. We've seen other guys who the back just keeps going out on them every once in a while. And this is two different spots of his back now that have had strains, and it just sucks for him.
Donovan Walton,
their depth.
Donovan Walton, another one that went down. He's going to be out until May after surgery, shoulder surgery in the off season. I things like this are just bringing my vibe down a little bit, Alex, yeah. And I want to keep them up. So I'm going to request that you and all Giants media just stop reporting on injuries and dudes being out.
I mean, let me
find out about them live.
It is very standard for spring training. So yeah. It is. And Walton had surgery in September. He's just behind. And quite frankly, he's not even on the 40 man anymore. And he's behind Brett Wisely and Isan Diaz when it comes to left-handed hitting middle infielders who are on the 40 man. So there's going to be guys. I know the Gonzalez thing is a bummer and Slater's a couple days behind, his elbow's barking a little bit. That's very standard for February. The key is make sure that nobody goes down March 20th. So
yeah, I feel like some of these guys like Slater just want to wait until the weather warms up a little bit in Scottsdale before they take the field. That's crazy. That.
You could see your breath. The other key is do not Google Prolander Barella. So just never do that. And you
I've been asked about that one a few times, and I've got
tweet about that guy every day.
One other thing, I guess the opposite of an injury. Wilmer Flores has arrived in camp after giving birth. No, he didn't give birth. His partner gave birth. Yeah. But there's another Wilmer running around, another Wilmer Flores. So hats off to Wilmy.
Yeah, people who don't know the story, there was already four Wilmer Floreses, including two in professional baseball. His brother's
he's nuts.
Yeah, a great prospect. It's like the George Foreman thing. And we were like, what was the baby boy's name? And he started laughing and he goes, Wilmer Jose Flores. So there's another one, but everybody's healthy. Wilmer's in camp and should play around March 2nd or March 3rd.
Okay. All right. Good for Wilmer. Before we get to Jock Peterson, I think it's worth following up on a thread Alex and I had pulled last episode or the episode before, which is Manny Machado's big offseason coming up where he could sign a massive deal with literally anyone. That has been canceled, and Manny Machado has been locked down for 11 years, $350 million to stay in San Diego. Good for him. This is the reward you get for being the first pitch clock violation of the year.
It is. He was like, look, I'm a literal holdout for Manny Machado. Has an impact on the Giants in two ways. One, you know that for the rest of the 2020s, you're probably facing a team that has Machado, Xander Bogaerts, and Fernando Tatis Jr. Look, the Padres seem to be pulling money out of wherever, but I would have a hard time seeing Juan Soto being there long-term as well. But at the very least, they know they have those three guys. That's not going away.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, I don't think Machado necessarily was going to be a Giants target. Maybe, but I don't know that he was going to be a Giants target at that number in the offseason, and that they were going to try to win a bidding war for him. But what it does do is it was him and Otani, and it's a really bad class of position players. And it basically now is just Otani, which means the Mets, the Dodgers, Cubs, whoever else wants to spend money this offseason, like, there's one guy to do it on. There's good pitchers out there, but like, there's one position player who's looking at the kind of deals that we saw last offseason. So it just, it makes it, it was going to be the biggest bidding war ever anyway. It just makes it so there's no plan B for some of these. Because, you know, Machado made sense for the Mets if they were going to draw the line at some point on Otani. Now there's no plan B. So just a little thing before we get into Otani talk in the offseason. But yeah, it definitely, you look at this free agent class and it's pretty brutal if you're looking for bats.
The Otani implication was my biggest concern about it too. Cause like you said, I never earnestly pictured Manny Machado wearing the orange and black. But it does mean there's going to be a lot more interest in the only guy left. So for him, that's a lot of money to live in San Diego. I feel like I accidentally willed this San Diego spending spree into existence by for so many years wondering why no one wants to play on the beach in Southern California. But here we go. This is my monkey paw to deal with now.
Yeah, how many times did you use the phrase AT&T Park South?
I literally had a shirt that was the old AT&T Park logo, but Petco Park.
This is your fault.
This is my fault.
We made too much fun of the Padres from about 2007 to 2018 or whatever it was. And this is the result of that.
Before we go on to Jock Peterson, I have one more for you. Friend of the show in the sense that we both like him, but he probably doesn't know we exist. Shane Bieber did an AMA on Reddit. And one of the top questions he was asked was, what was your order at Freebirds in Isla Vista? So Shane Bieber from UCSB.
What was his order?
His order was rice, black beans, double up on both of those, cheese, chicken, steak, pico, and medium salsa over nachos, plus guac, no matter how much extra it costs.
All right. I was a little worried, and then you got to the nachos part, and I was excited. By the way, maybe he read The Weather Human. He might know who I am. You don't know that.
Are you allowed to just go out there and tell people you were the Weather Human right now?
I don't know. Nobody knows what it means. So some people.
Yeah, that's true. This is really niche for a small amount of listeners.
It is. If you got to this point, you're like, where the F is Jock Peterson? Who cares about UC Santa Barbara?
Let's get to Jock Peterson.
Jock Peterson.
All right. Anything we need to know going into this interview?
A quick Jock Peterson interview. Okay. This is more of a he hit a home run and credited Barry Bonds afterwards. So we get him on set for. Than a long seconds. Sit down, but we had a lot to talk about this week. So, but you know, Jock is always entertaining.
Yes, the Giant.
Jock Peterson joins us now. Back to the Giants, year two with the Giants. This offseason, you know, you could have chased a multi-year deal, but you go with a qualifying offer. What made that the right decision for you?
Just really love my time in San Francisco. It's a great organization, super first class for players, for family, for everything. So it was just a really good fit. I'm excited for this year and to see what's to come.
We see you doing some recruiting on Instagram a little bit, and Logan says I text Jock to find out what's going on in free agency. Farhan has joked the same thing, that you're always on top of roster moves. What is an off season like that? Like for you, just because you do know so many guys and so many of these superstars that maybe want to see if they can be Giants?
I mean, I love winning, and a lot of times you don't need great players to win, but you need good players. And I think we did an awesome job acquiring great players. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Get to know Conforto, Mitch, Manea, Stripling, I already know he was my roommate in AA actually. It's going to be a lot more fun, a lot more depth. We can cover some injuries.
There's something different for you in year two at the Giants. You're basically taking most of your reps at first base this spring. What is the toughest challenge for you about moving over there after being an outfielder most of your life?
I did it once with the Dodgers. Yeah. I didn't get to do spring training. I was just thrown into a regular season game, and it was moving really fast, so I didn't do very well. And you learn from your mistakes, and Kai's been working really hard with me, extra hours, trying to get right, and I feel really comfortable. But, yeah, I just had a conversation with Cap, obviously adding two more outfielders. I said, if you had to put me at first base right now in a game, like, I wouldn't feel very comfortable. This was before spring training. I said, but if I didn't take any fly balls and you said go play outfield, I'd be like, okay, cool. That's, I know I'm very comfortable in outfield. So just to expand my versatility and the team's versatility and needs, I'm excited.
So you do have the full season now back home under your belt. What was that like for you?
Pretty surreal. I mean, going to the field every day, the same field I would go to watch a game as a kid. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Great fan base, playing at home. Yeah, I can't beat it.
And you've got your brother around too, which...
Yeah, so I bring him into the field every day. He works around the stadium, and he really enjoys that too. So it's a lot of fun.
You guys now have a bunch of Bay Area guys in the clubhouse and also a bunch of Bay Area guys who played high school football as well as baseball. Haniger was a very good high school wide receiver. At his stats here, 888 yards, 85 catches, 7 touchdowns. So who's the best wide receiver in the clubhouse now?
I think I had like 6 touchdowns in my first 3 games.
Okay, so still Jock.
You could do the math.
I could do that math.
But it sounds like he was pretty good.
Yeah.
We need to have a route running contest. Sometime.
Well, you have Crawford, the quarterback. So.
Yeah.
We could make that happen. I feel like we've got a football team here. With splash hits, you've got 3 of the last 4. We were just talking to Michael Conforto. His bets are on you to get the next splash hit. Does it feel different when you get a splash hit as opposed to another hit?
I mean, another home run, it's somewhat similar.
Yeah.
I mean, but... I mean, a single compared to a home
well,
run.
Well, sure. Yes, I mean, yes. Another home run.
Yeah. It's not, like, that much different. It's still really cool. But I'll take any homer I can get, I'll take. That doesn't need to land in the water.
Do you have any predictions on who gets 100?
Where are we at?
97.
Well, I guess I'll say Conforto. He said me. I'll say him.
Teamwork.
That would be a lot of, that means we're hitting some homers. I like it.
Good teammates. Jock, thank you for the time.
Absolutely. Right on. Thanks.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.